As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hey, it's Thursday morning. It's a gorgeous start to your day out there. Hopefully, you got big plans to have lunch outside or something today and not let it go to waste. I love this time of year when it's not miserably hot yet. Perfect, I would say. Mark Cox in here, Kim St. Ange, Ethan Bright running the board for us this morning, and we'll have Sue Thomas along with traffic in a few minutes. By the way, don't forget the podcast, because I don't say it enough probably as much as they'd like me to, but if you miss anything, you can go back and pick it up on the podcast. We podcast every segment for you, and if you just can't listen all 4 hours in the morning, you can always download that. Anywhere you download your podcasts, just look for the Mark Cox Show, or you can go to the Odyssey app, go to 971talk.com. There are lots of different ways that you can get involved here. All right, Jim Talent is coming up. Of course, former senator, anxious to get his take on the latest murder in Maryland by an illegal alien, while the state's senator is busy in El Salvador trying to free another illegal alien. It's pretty head-scratching, I'll admit, and we'll get Jim's take on that for you coming up. We'll also talk to our friends from the Illinois Policy Institute talking about, you know, it's either winter or it's construction season. If you drive into this to Missouri, at least from the Illinois side, and I know this from Ryan Wiggins and others who do it every day, it's a nightmare right now. So we're going to talk about that. They're trying to divvy up how much they're going to spend on potholes and repairs in the state of Illinois. And as you can imagine, the bulk of it goes to Chicago. Surprise, surprise. We'll talk to our friends from Illinois Policy coming up at about 7:35 this morning. Next hour, Shannon Bream and Griff Jenkins as well, as usual, on a Thursday morning. So right now, I want us to get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Just as much as we understand that, you know, Republicans subscribe to white supremacy, in the Democratic Party, there are folks that need to understand that their positions of privilege that they need to get up.
Oh, this is lady I've never heard of, Alencia Johnson. And she's apparently on board with David Hogg. First of all, if you disagree with her at all, you are a white supremacist. So if you're a Republican, you're a white supremacist. And if you're a Democrat that disagrees with her, you need to resign your office in Congress so they can replace you with somebody who agrees with her.
We were all outraged by the speech that was given by Jerome Powell last week. It was really, I've been following this for 40 years. I thought it was the most outrageous partisan attack against a new president that I've ever seen.
Thank you, Stephen Moore, a brilliant guy, and pointing out the truth. Remember what they said about President Trump's criticism of Jay Powell. You shouldn't try to politicize the Fed. The Fed has always been political, more so in recent years. And I love what he pointed out about what Jerome Powell said about the president.
We don't articulate as Black women our pain because it's almost like nobody ever gave us permission to do that.
And does anyone care?
You know, her lack of privilege is just shocking, Michelle Obama. She doesn't have access to the airwaves. Nobody pays any attention to her. I mean, she's probably mistreated by her staff at her multiple homes around the country. It must just be awful to be Michelle Obama.
Three Metro East communities are pushing back over bills being considered by state lawmakers that would force them to change the names of local mascots.
Yes, indeed. How about that story this morning? This is something that should be bipartisan outrage, and I don't know if it will be or not, because shout out to all my friends over in Southern Illinois, but you know, the people that run your state generally are north of Springfield, and that's sad, but you're so heavily outnumbered by Cook County that even if every Republican and Democrat in the southern part of the state voted against this, it's probably going to pass anyway. It passed the House already. Mm-hmm. I understand that Katie Stewart and other, who's a Democrat, voted against it, even though she's from the downstate here. She voted against it. There's a bill that's now in the Illinois Senate, and unless you raise a lot of hell about this, they're going to pass it in the Senate, and J.B. Pritzker is going to sign it. And it will basically, if you were attended a local high school in Illinois and your mascot had anything to do with short people or Native Americans, they're going to have to scrub the walls and find a new name because, by golly, somebody somewhere has been offended.
Look at the NFL teams that change their names, and other places across the country have done this. So
went woke a long time ago.
I fully expect this to be passed by the Senate and for Pritzker to sign it.
Well, I listened to Annie's show for a little bit yesterday. She was talking to some of the representatives of the school districts over in the Metro East, and one of them said they've got a signed letter from a Native American group that said they support the name of the mascot. I remember when the whole debate came around about Chief Illiniwek years ago, and they had to stop having Chief Illiniwek show up at Illinois University of Illinois events, if you'll remember how ridiculous that was, because Illinois is named after the Illini, the Illinois Indian tribe. That's where the name came from, for the whole state, not just the university.
You have to remember, too, that you usually pick a name that signifies strength and power. There's a reason why you don't hear of a school like the Parkway West Walking Sticks. That doesn't at all signify power. So if you have a Native American name, is that not a compliment?
It is apparently not.
Someone help me understand that. I guess I don't see why they would be so offended.
Listen to the rest of this KSDK report here.
Big controversy. So the bills would prohibit the use of Native American and discriminatory disability mascots, the Collinsville Kahawks, the Freeburg Midgets, and Muscoota Indians have been using their mascots for more than a century. The bill still has to get through the state Senate and still has to be signed by the governor. But district leaders of both Muscoota and Collinsville are encouraging people to share their thoughts on the issue with their local elected officials.
Disability mascots. So I did not understand. I don't know if most people who are short consider themselves to have a disability. Is it considered a disability? We mentioned Peter Dinklage earlier. I mean, he's probably one of the most famous actors who's achieved a lot of fame and wealth and didn't let the fact that does he have dwarfism? I don't even know what his condition is that caused him to be as small as he is, but he's overcome a lot of things. But the fact that they have the Mighty Midgets over here, remember, there have been several attempts over the years to get them to change that name, and the people don't want it changed. They had a basketball team years ago that apparently none of them were very tall, but they were extraordinarily successful, and they adopted the name the Mighty Midgets, mm-hmm. and then they just made that their mascot, and now suddenly somebody somewhere is butthurt about it. Point to the doll and tell me where this hurt you.
again, it was a compliment at the time because they were mighty.
I know. So anyway, our friend Annie Fry has helping coordinate a bipartisan rally. It's not a Democrat-Republican issue, although I would point out that if you do support that other party, they're the ones that caused this. They're the ones that are doing this to you out of their political correctness. But they are trying to hold a rally at Collinsville High School on Sunday, I think at 2 o'clock on the football field over there, to show how many people support these local schools and communities making their own decisions. This should be a local decision and not dictated by Springfield. Is their choice here? That's the point they're trying to make. So if you listen to Annie's show again today, I'm sure she'll have more details on it. But Sunday at 2 o'clock is when they're hoping to hold this bipartisan rally and get Republicans and Democrats and independents. And I'm sure members of the local school districts are encouraging people to show up wearing their jerseys, their school colors, and just in a sort of a show of strength. So maybe somebody up in Springfield will pay a little bit of attention to that. Just maybe. I hope so. Coming up, we'll get to former Senator Jim Talent. Bottom of the hour, Dylan Sharkey's going to join us. He's an assistant editor up at the Illinois Policy Institute. If you're sick and tired of the potholes that you hit every morning as you drive through Southern Illinois, a little bit of insight into how that happens and why it happens coming up here at 7:35. We'll be back.
Catch anything you missed today by getting the show podcast at 971talk.com.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bums of dime in your prime.
The embassy, the Trump administration, is doing nothing right now to comply with that court order. What they're doing is trying to change the subject, as if you can't comply with the Constitution and fight gang violence. I've been fighting MS-13 longer than Donald Trump probably ever uttered the words.
Jim Talent joining us right now, as always, on a Thursday morning. Jim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
You know, I was just looking at this story about yet another murder in Maryland committed by an illegal alien, one of Chris Van Hollen's constituents murdered by an illegal alien. Meanwhile, he's spending a lot of resources and capital going to El Salvador and trying to fight to bring another illegal back.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, this is a section. So we have millions of people in the country illegally, and a substantial segment of them who come over the border are really bad guys. MS-3 or 13 is a section of that, a subsection of that. And there is evidence, and how much there is going to eventually get litigated, that they're working in cooperation with Venezuelan authorities, and that therefore this is equivalent to some kind of a foreign invasion or entry into the United States. That's what this is about, because in those circumstances, these people are like foreign combatants, and they're not like immigrants, illegal or otherwise, right? So it's a small segment of what the administration is trying to deal with. They have a case that they can just simply deport them. And in any event, once they get out of the country, they're outside the jurisdiction of the court. The point is, Mark, this is a back and forth between the executive and the judiciary. I don't think it's going to affect the overall effort at all. And I think the Trump administration is right to push their authority to the limit to clean up the mess that was created in the 4 years before they came into office. And people aren't talking about that enough. I mean, no. You know, what are you supposed to do when you we don't have really any idea, 10, 12, 15 million people. And a lot of them are the kind of people who will traffic girls, who will run drugs, who will kill people. And the president's trying to get them out of the country. So I wish him well in the effort. I do encourage people. This is getting done, and it's going to continue to get done regardless of the outcome of these lower-level judicial skirmishes.
Jim, I have to get your take on the situation between Ukraine, Russia, because you have Trump coming out saying, you know, Zelensky's been pretty tough to work with. In fact, the latest I had heard was that he thought he had a deal with Putin, but not Zelensky. And he went as far as to criticize Zelensky for not recognizing, was it Russian control of Crimea specifically?
Yeah. Well, I didn't see that, but the deal that the president's clearly been working towards is a deal where the Russians get to keep a fair amount of the territory they claim. Zelensky gets the rest of the country. He gets sovereignty over the rest of the country. He gets connections and economic development with the West. And he gets, as a practical matter, a security guarantee, because with the aid of the West, and I think it should be paid for mostly by the Europeans, he gets to rebuild his army and his economy. Okay, so in essence, a return to the status quo before the war, except that Russia gets a little more territory because they're winning on the battlefield. I mean, so that's what the president's trying to engineer. I continue to believe that the bigger problem, and I think if you look at everything the Trump administration is saying, the bigger problem is going to be Putin, precisely because he's having success on the battlefield, so he doesn't want the war to stop.
Sure, sure.
So, and I think Trump is the tools he has to get into the table are the sanctions and other things to inflict continued aid, which they're doing to inflict costs and consequences on Russia if they don't negotiate.
I'm sure it's a bitter pill for Vladimir Zelensky to swallow, but the bottom line is it's been 11 years during the Obama administration when Vladimir Putin took Crimea. The Ukrainians are not getting it back. They weren't getting it back before the latest invasion. If that's his sticking point, that's a losing argument.
Yeah, if they'd done the negotiations 2 years ago when I first suggested it, not that I was running American foreign policy, they'd have had a stronger hand, because yes, at that point, the Ukrainians had the upper hand in the battlefield. They didn't. They wanted to try an offensive. I understand that. They did. It culminated in October of 2023, and it failed. And ever since then, the Russians have been gradually, at enormous cost, chewing up additional territory. And so it's not in anybody's interest to continue the war. I think this is maneuvering by Putin to get the best possible deal. The president understands that, and he's trying to get this done. I think eventually he will. The mistake Trump has made, if you want to call it that, I think he said, well, you know, maybe I was exaggerating a little, was when he said he'd settle it in 24 hours. I mean, it's going to take longer than that. But, I mean, nobody thought that. What he was saying is he was going to go to work right away, which is what he did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's certainly not prone to overstate things. I don't know what you're talking about.
He never exaggerates things. Yeah, maybe that's so unlike Trump.
Maybe what he should have said is, it could be solved in 24 hours if we could get everybody to agree to what I want them to do.
In an afternoon, if both sides wanted it. But and I think Putin wants to end this eventually, but I think he's testing. Mm. And Trump knows what he's doing.
Yep.
So let's see what happens if Trump goes after the banks and the continued oil shipments from Russia to Western Europe. And let's see what happens if the price of oil stays down. This is costing Russia an awful lot of money. So let's see what happens.
That's true. Jim Talent, thank you as always, my friend. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. Former Senator Jim Talent there. Good to get him on, and particularly his thoughts on Ukraine. I mean, he was floated as a defense secretary candidate during the last Trump administration. So he keeps up well with all of this stuff. Coming up, you know, there's always this talk about if we just spent more money, test scores in education would go higher, but they don't. And in Illinois, they keep spending more money on roads, but they never seem to get any better. We're going to talk to the Illinois Policy Institute when we come back. Well, if you are stuck in traffic right now trying to get across the bridge from Illinois into Missouri this morning, this story is for you. If you're fed up with the constant construction, and then, of course, you'll be driving along at some other point, and your whole car will shake when you hit a pothole big enough to screw up your alignment, you're probably just shaking your head. Then you find out how much Illinois is actually spending on transportation. You might have questions. I have questions. Dylan Sharkey's with us this morning. He's with the Illinois Policy Institute. Dylan, welcome in.
Of course, Mark. Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, I always hear the argument. I heard, I think it was Martha McCallum arguing with Randy Weingarten from the NEA the other day about evidence that even in these places where they spend more on education, it doesn't guarantee a better result. What's going on with the transportation dollars in Illinois?
Yeah, so Illinois drivers are paying billions more than they were in 2019. So you would think that if they're paying more, they should be getting better roads, but the numbers don't show that. In national data comparing states, highways across every state, Illinois' percentage of roads deemed acceptable, it hasn't even gotten better. It's gone down.
Oh,
we can't
wow.
even keep maintaining the same roads we have. And now I don't expect it to get better in 1 year. You know, 2019, roads projects take a long time, but this has been years. It's been multiple years since they doubled the gas tax in 2019. So they've had plenty of time to improve these roads. And, you know, you can't even maintain the same number. It's gone from, I think, 81% of roads deemed acceptable or good down to 79. So they can't even spend what they have right.
So is the issue that they have this money and they're spending it elsewhere, or that it has been allocated for these construction projects for road work, but they've just been slow to get these projects actually started and completed?
It's a mix of both. So politicians have what are called pork projects, you know, things that are designated to their little slice of Illinois. For example, we did an investigation back when they first doubled the gas tax, and some of the money went to things like it's infrastructure. So infrastructure is a very broad spending category.
Sure.
And so it went to things like snowmobile paths and like pickleball courts, things that don't really help drivers, but that drivers are paying for because they take construction money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You pay the second highest gas taxes.
You refer in this article to performance-based budgeting, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of performance here. How are they making these decisions?
Oh, the gas taxes. So now since they've doubled the gas tax in 2018, there's an automatic hike adjusted for inflation. So they can go years and years without actually making the unpopular decision of voting to raise taxes, which is a huge political risk because people, you know, are on your neck about raising taxes.
Right.
But if it's automatic, you never really get that because it's just kind of calculated in with the numbers. And they're saying that, you know, from 2019 to now, they still need more. You know, they're floating, some state senators are floating a vehicle mileage tax where, you know, drivers have to pay based on their odometer each year, report it to the state, and then pay based off that because apparently we're not getting enough money from drivers. And the most frustrating thing is Illinois doesn't have more drivers. Our registered vehicles are about the same. And so they're getting more money from the same amount of people, and it's still not enough.
It's amazing. Dylan Sharkey, our guest from the Illinois Policy Institute. So they have a lot of toll roads. I know up around Chicago because I've had to drive on them before. And then there's always been the difference between the amount of attention paid to more urban, suburban roads and rural roads as opposed to those in the city. So I'm guessing here an inordinate amount of the money gets spent around Chicago. Is that what's going on?
Well, so Chicago has added taxes. So like certain counties, Cook County and the counties around it, they have county taxes on top of the state taxes.
Yeah.
There's multiple layers of it. And so a lot of the Cook County taxes goes to specific Cook County projects, and same for the other counties surrounding it.
You know, I think to what has been happening, I guess it's New York City, right, where they're charging people more money to get in. So even like
come
taxi,
across the bridge.
So taxi drivers are having to deal with that. So you have to wonder if Illinois is looking at something like that, where to come into to Chicago specifically, they'll find other ways. I mean, you talked about the mileage tax that has been floated out there. This just is ridiculous ways, specifically to target people like us, like Mark and me, who don't live there but might be visiting there.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things they love about it, is that if you're just visiting, you can't vote them out. So who cares if they pay more?
Yeah.
And so you're right. Mayor Brandon Johnson in Chicago has talked about a congestion tax similar to the one in New York. But the issue with that is you're just asking people to not come and spend money. So, you know, your impact on your economy long term is not good.
Well, he's a socialist, so we understand what he's after. You know, Dylan, I was looking through the website there, the Illinois Policy, and there's a controversy going on down here right now. I don't know if you guys have dealt with it at Illinois Policy, with this House bill that has already passed the House over there that would stop schools from using any mascot connected to disability groups or Native Americans. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that bill. You know, there's a flurry of bills coming in. There's a lot of really kooky ones every year. That one had not made it on my list.
Yeah, so our midday host, Annie Fry, has been concentrating on this because she lives over in that area. And it would ban discriminatory disability mascots and Native American team names. And I guess it's passed the House, and now it's going to go to the Senate. This House Bill 1237, and they think Pritzker would sign it. And it's going to cost these school districts millions of dollars to retool everything, you know, buy new jerseys, tear down all their signs, all this stuff. Nobody seems to care because somebody might be offended that your team mascot is called the Indians.
Yeah, you know, the worst part of that, and every year at the end of session before lawmakers go home at Memorial Day, there's always a list of good bills that don't get through. It's like, well, we didn't have enough time. You know, there's only so many things we can pass. And you look at the things that they decide to pass, and it's like, how is this, you know, regardless of the merits of the bill, totally aside, how is this a priority over other things that didn't get passed?
It's true.
This is like a top priority for people that's, you know, not really impacting many people's lives on the daily.
Well, an issue here in Missouri for a while has been homeschooling and how the state deals with people that homeschool. And I know Illinois, you've written a story on this recently as well. They have a bill targeting homeschoolers as well, correct?
Yes, not just homeschoolers, private schools as well. So it would make every homeschool and private school essentially turn over a roster to the state of their kids. And the issue with that, you know, for private schools is that you're basically forcing families in private schools to disclose their religion, because if they go to a Catholic school or Jewish school, you're basically forcing them to put their name and religion out of these papers.
Wow. And is this one going to pass? I mean,
so it passed out of committee in the House. It missed a crucial deadline, but just because that bill missed a deadline, it doesn't mean they couldn't slip it into a different bill. So the bill in its current form is stalled, but that doesn't mean the idea itself is dead by any means.
Wow. Dylan Sharkey, listen, we appreciate your time there at the Illinois Policy Institute. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
All right. Illinoispolicy.org if you want to read up more on any of those. This bill would take homeschoolers, anybody who homeschools in the state of Illinois, some of them do co-ops. Obviously, they work with other homeschoolers mm-hmm. and get their kids together. They would have to register as a nonprofit. They would have to be sure that if they were meeting anywhere, it had to be somewhere other than home.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Well, didn't they, under this bill, have to potentially submit their curriculum? And if, because then the concern is, you know, if they're teaching about, you know, Adam and Eve versus, you know, we came from apes, then that would be controversial. And the state could come in and try to shut them down for that, saying, you're not teaching about evolution.
I'm sure. But that's a big government in Illinois for you there. Illinoispolicy.org if you want to read more about it. All right, coming up, we're going to get to Kim on a Whim. What are we talking about today?
Well, I don't know if you guys realize this, but the birth rate here in the United States is declining. Well, the Trump administration has floated this idea about one way to combat that, and I just found a clip I have to play for you from The View. You can imagine their reaction to anything the Trump administration has to say, but especially when it comes to what they want to do to try to convince people to have more babies.
Back in a minute.
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
Kim on a Whim.
Birth rates here in the United States hit a record low in 2023. Then they went up by 1% in 2024. But still, it's just pretty sad. People are just opting not to have children for a variety of reasons. There was a study that came out that asked people why they're choosing not to have children. The majority said they just don't want to. Many of them mentioned can't afford it, you know, want to focus on other things, concern with the world. Another 26% said they have concerns about the environment.
Was selfish on that list?
It was not.
Oh,
but
oh,
yeah,
I'm
that,
sorry.
That wasn't one
sorry.
Of the, yeah, that's odd.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, I'm sorry. Don't mean to offend anybody there. I just think that's kind of how God made us. And there are people who can't have children. I understand that. But for the ones that can and choose not to, I think that's a decision they may regret someday.
Well, Trump is really trying to encourage more families to have children. So now they're considering this $5,000, what they're calling a baby bonus, that would essentially hand out up to $5,000 per delivery to try to reverse the birth rate decline here in the United States. And of course, he's getting a lot of pushback about that. I found this clip from The View, and you can just imagine what The View is saying about this. So this is Sunny Hostin, who's reacting to the Trump administration suggesting this. And keep in mind, they're talking about how the birth rate was at a record low in 2023, and then it went up 1% last year.
That increase was with Hispanic mothers and Asian mothers. So they don't seem to be concerned about that increase. They seem to be more concerned about a decrease in other populations.
Say it.
No, I but think I've said enough.
That's not based on that.
And so, well, it's just
there you go. So The View is suggesting that this idea of a baby bonus is racially motivated and that they basically just want more white people to start having children.
Beauty fades, stupids forever.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on that.
Well, that's
those
true.
People are dumb. Now, I'm not sure this is the solution. I got to be honest with you. Children are expensive. If you wait till you can afford them, you might never have them. Let's just face that.
It's true.
It's going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars to raise a child between clothing them and feeding them, and then depending on what kind of education you pay for them, car insurance, life insurance. I mean, it's never ending. You have to clothe them, apparently. Never ending. Sports, you know, they get into specialty sports and you're on traveling teams. It costs a lot of money. If you wait till you can afford it, you'll never do it. But let's just face it, when you have children, for the most part, you're in your childbearing years. Let's say you're 25 to 35, 40 years old. $5,000 is not going to make a difference. $5,000 is not going to be what tips the scale toward getting pregnant or not getting pregnant.
It might convince some people. Now, a lot of women will talk about how we need better paid maternity leave in the United States. The issue with that is that in order to do that, it would either require us raising taxes like many other countries do, where they're through the roof, and that's how you get this maternity leave, I mean, for months and months and months. Or you force your small business owner to, you know, offer 12 weeks paid maternity leave. And in many cases, if they have a lot of women working for them, that would potentially put them out of business. So you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to hire women. That would, of course, be discriminatory. But maybe the $5,000 could be used toward daycare costs or, you know, maternity leave. I don't know.
Maybe. Let's see. Jay is here on line one and wants to talk about this. Jay, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. The better job and the higher pay goes to people who have four kids. Job prospector who goes in and brags and gloats about I have one kid, the employer says not enough. By social norm, you have four kids and get the better job with a higher pay immediately, paid by the company, not by the government.
Why do you think?
Any questions?
No. Why do you think that? You think because people are treated better if they have four children instead of one?
Well, you can't discriminate, of course, by age, race, disability, gender. That's already on the books. But you can discriminate preferentially by people who have more children. So one kid doesn't get you in the door. Yeah?
Interesting.
How would you say that what's the difference there? How are they treated better if you have, say, four children versus one?
Well, what I would say was the royal bee jelly goes to the person with four children, and really the managerial training is based on you come in the door and then we put you on the fast track. So they get the royal bee jelly. You really don't have to depend on skill for the manager job. You have to depend on training, and if they're not that good, then the people who don't have the four children fill in the gap and work overtime.
It's an interesting idea there. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I don't think I've either.
It's never been my experience or perception that had a whole lot to do with promotion
I would think it'd be the opposite. I would think that person with four children might be more inclined to take paternity leave, which a lot of companies are offering. So maybe you're gone for two weeks, 4 weeks, depending on how much is available. Your kid's sick, so you're having to stay home on certain days more than just if you were sick.
He was talking specifically about, I guess, the declining birth rate. I think, and I mentioned this before, that maybe an idea that would be more appealing would be a tax credit toward childcare expenses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like a mortgage.
Just a tax credit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not an upfront payment, but if you can show me how much you've paid in child in child care for the year, we give you a credit toward your taxes for half of that amount or something like that. Now, the Democrats would say that's costing the government money because they see any sort of tax cut or credit as an expense because it takes money out of the greedy government's pocket. But I think that might encourage people more because that's got to be a prime concern these days is, well, I'd love to have a kid,
but
if I have one or two, how do I pay the child care? Because somebody's got to watch them during the day while I'm working and to make a living.
Can't survive on one income.
$5,000's not going to cover
that.
You
give people $5,000, they'll spend it on cheeseburgers and clothes and
Daddy's
vacations.
Getting a new 60-inch TV. Sorry, that's where that's going to happen. All right, coming up, we're going to get to Shannon Bream of Fox News Sunday at about 8:22. Stay tuned.